squeeze things in. I'm Peter Morales, and this is Don Southworth. I'm the minister in Jefferson Unitarian Church in Golden, Colorado. And this workshop had its seeds at Star King School of the Ministry, where Don and I are classmates, and we were whining one coffee time about how clueless we thought our denomination and our congregations were about outreach and evangelism and public relations. My background was in newspaper publishing before going to seminary, and Don's was in sales and marketing. So,
don't hold that against me, though.
Yeah, hold on to your wallet.
It's mine.
So, with that as my introduction, Don will introduce himself a little bit and take us into our next thing.
I'm currently the intern, not interim, people always hear that wrong, intern minister at UUs of San Mateo in California, and will be graduating in May from Star King. Peter got out a year early. And my interest, actually, before the seat of the coffee shop whining, I was driving down about 2 weeks into my seminary career on the road, and as you think about when you drive, geez, this Unitarian Universalism, I'd only been in a couple of years, and I had started finding out when I was in seminary that a lot of people, shockingly to me, didn't want to grow. It's like people, I found out about, heard stories of congregations who actually had a conscious decision not to have new people there. And I started thinking, well, maybe this isn't as good as I thought it was. If they don't want to give it away and share it, maybe I'm not in the wrong place. I'm in the wrong place. So we actually proposed to teach a class at Star King, and where you'd think a seminary school, there'd be a lot of evangelism courses, right? In fact, we were told after they accepted our proposal, because students are allowed to teach at Star King, it's one of the great things about Star King, they told us they had a lot of controversy about even allowing the class. Some people, the word gets people so upset that they weren't sure they wanted to have that in the catalog. And so fortunately, wiser heads prevailed. What we'd like to start with is introductions. And basically, we want to hear three things from everybody. And of course, we got a lot of people, so we're going to do this fairly fast. Of course, your name, where you're from. And what we'd like to hear is, what's the biggest challenge in your congregation from becoming an evangelistic church or congregation? What's the biggest obstacle that you have, that you see in your congregation or fellowship, that stops you from being a real evangelistic congregation? So, and we're going to take notes of that, because we're going to come back and use that information a little bit later. So, jump up, start.
My name is Rachel. Hey. I'm the Growth and Extension Coordinator with the Canadian Unitarian Council. My congregation are all of the congregations in Canada, and our biggest impediment to growth and sharing, being evangelistic, is fear. I'm Carolyn Madden.
Okay. We're going to put you to work right now. The roots of evangelism are good news.
Can I interrupt you for a minute?
Yeah.
Excuse me. I don't want to.
We're
going to pass this around, and we've asked for a name, address, and email if you wish. We need your name from everybody, because we have some ceremonies at the end of the class we need your name for. So that's why we need your name. The address and email is because one of the seeds that we're starting to work on is a vision of the National Unitarian Universalism Evangelism Society, or something to that effect. And so we're frankly recruiting people who are interested. So if the name's under
construction. It's still dues-free.
Nobody involved. If you get charter member, just put your name, at least your name. If you're interested in getting whatever we come out with, put your mailing address and email, please, too. Okay? We'll just pass it around.
I'm supportive of congregational advertising.
So the root of evangelism is good news. It's about having something important to share. In no more than three or four sentences, what to you, write down, is the good news to you of Unitarian Universalism? Why are you a Unitarian Universalist? We're having to speed up a little bit, haven't gotten started 20 minutes late. So can we hear a few of you share out what briefly is your good news about Unitarian Universalism? Powerful to reflect on it. and it's powerful to say it and to hear it. I'm going to present briefly my frame for evangelism, kind of trying to reframe it. And I think we have fallen into the trap, and it is a trap, and really a tragic one, of allowing evangelism to be associated with conversion and with belief, as opposed to sharing something that is, for us, good news. If you believe, as I do, that we are inherently relational beings, that people need intimacy, that they need spiritual growth and depth, that children need religious education, that people need to be engaged in the world and in social action, and if we see our churches as a place for that, fulfilling those basic human needs for meaning, affiliation, intimacy, depth, then I believe not to be evangelistic is the moral equivalent of not housing the homeless and not feeding the hungry. I don't know how we can justify at the deepest moral, theological level that our reticence. An experience that I've heard dozens of times, and it was mine, it may be the sort of modal experience of adult UUs, is to say, I was a UU for 20 years, but didn't know it. And I think when I hear that now, I wince. And I suggest we should collectively hang our heads in shame when we hear that, because it means that we haven't done the very simple thing of communicating who we are, not converting anyone, not changing their mind, but simply opening the door and saying, welcome. So I want to suggest to you that as long as we keep evangelism and allow the term to be defined the way it is traditionally, about accepting a set of beliefs, of belief statements, some dogma, or some that kind of conversion experience, I think we appropriately react negatively to that. But by doing so, we leave the field to everyone else, and all those people who are in the hundreds of thousands and probably millions who are UUs and do not yet know it, because they have never heard of us. That we have failed somehow in a basic human responsibility of meeting people's needs. So in summary, I believe, and I think most of you share that belief, that finding meaning and finding community and being on a collective journey is fundamental to who we are as people and a fundamental need. If you accept that, the implications of that are very profound.
I'm going to talk to you a little bit about what I see as the keys and the obstacles to becoming an evangelistic congregation. And some of my thunder was probably stolen by Alice yesterday, so I have to...
A lot of our thunder.
We're doing such a good job, everybody's talking about it now. Basically, she had, I think, what, five or six barriers that she said. I think there's only two barriers. And the only two obstacles we have to becoming more evangelistic are pretty simple. The clergy and the laity. And other than that, it's a piece of cake. The flip side of that is that it's also that those are the keys, clergy and laity. Because when you look at things, all these obstacles, you put them in specific language, but the obstacles are pretty much always, is all the study I've done and looked at, is always between the clergy and the laity. The clergy, some of the concerns they have is fear. You know, ministers get afraid too. One of the things, you coming from the business world, there's a model in the business world that people may be really good at starting up companies, but then when they grow, get somebody else in.
Well, the same, you know, in a lot of ways, the ministers are the same, too. Alice had one of the handouts was talked about the different ministers for the different types of churches. I think the small one was lover, the middle side was administrator, and the last one is leader. Now, I don't know too many ministers who wouldn't say, what do you mean I'm not a leader? But there's definitely different skills that go in different types of churches. And sometimes ministers, I think, get a little nervous, a little afraid. Well, if we grow too much, can I be the one? Most of the surveys say that when new people come in, the most important thing to them is the minister or the pastor. They look for things like good sermons, warmth, and spiritual depth. Those are the three things that a lot of people, when they do these surveys, say those are the things they're looking for. It's real close, though, how you're welcome. I mean, depends on the surveys. But definitely a minister has a presence. One of the things that people raised here, and when we taught our evangelism class, first day, they said, can you be introverted and be an evangelist? That was one of the questions. And by the end of the class, this introverted person found ways they could be an evangelist. So even if your minister may not be, you know, somebody who's out there glad-handing or things like that, you can still set up situations where they can be warm and open. I mean, I know of some congregations that the minister, you know, like coffee hour, some people love it, some people don't. They might set up like a little private, kind of a specialist place where the minister is kind of not getting surrounded by everybody, but a place where new people can come and at least talk to the minister. Just, there's a lot of little things you can do. The thing that people say that was the biggest thing that kept them from joining was they were ignored by the minister. And it doesn't mean that they have to be like saying hello, but just that they never made a connection with the minister. And that could even be through a newsletter column. It doesn't have to just be always face-to-face. The laity, one of the things that the laity, some of the challenges for the laity is a lot of people, especially in a conference like this, I always get a little nervous when it's like so much growth. I mean, I love growth. But when I talk to congregations, when they talk about growth, my first question is why? Because growth can become a buzzword. So, like, why do you want to grow? And then sometimes they look at me like, what an idiot. You don't know why we want to grow? And I say, well, I don't know why you want to grow. So it's kind of the vocation piece. You really have to know why you want to grow. But the laity say things, they do put mixed expectations out of a minister. You know, we love this pastoral, but now you got to make this bigger. And it's like there's mixed expectations. Well, what do you want me to do? That questionnaire she had, those A and B things, was excellent to see really where people are at. The other thing that comes up a lot when a congregation grows, I forgot my thank you. The other thing that comes up when congregations grow is that sometimes the laity can't deal with having their spiritual needs met by somebody other than the minister. Because usually when you really grow to some of the bigger churches, the minister's not going to be the person who's going to be in your workshops and classes. It might be you're going to a class put on by somebody outside the congregation or somebody in the congregation. And if you're not willing to have lay people help serve your spiritual needs, it's a mixed message. And those are just a couple of things that get in the way. The bottom line, they say, what seems to be most important, this is from one of the books. By the way, we have a bibliography of books and a handout for you can get afterwards. It's got some of these books. But Speed Lees, in a book he wrote, The Inviting Church, with Roy Oswald, said, what seems to be most important, more important than anything else, is that growing congregations have a positive personality, which showed in the congregation through three ways: energy, belief in inclusion, and a sense of unique identity. Now, my experience in about three congregations that I've been involved with somewhat regularly as a Unitarian Universalist is when I walked in, I could get a sense of the energy right off the bat. And I don't mean to damn these three congregations, but each one of these, I did not feel like it was really great that I was there. Nobody was mean or anything like that, but it was like it was clear people were connected with other people, and it wasn't like I felt special being there. And maybe after three times you think, well, maybe, Don, that's you, not the congregation, but we won't go there. But because I think that a lot of times that's not necessarily, if we give me some characteristics of Unitarian Universalist congregations, very few have I experienced that are really, really open and welcoming the first time you walk in. And a lot of times people have to fight to get there, like Peter was saying. The keys, because I come from sales and marketing, I guess I like to make things simple. So I try to make things simple so I can remember them. And what really convinced me of this is last year at General Assembly, one of the things that I believe and I have found is once you decide you're an evangelist, and the most important exercise we do when we do these workshops or classes is what you already did, writing your good news and getting really to where it's your good news, that you can feel, I could tell anybody this. That's the most important piece to really good evangelism. Once you decide that and you know you got something to share, it's pretty easy. There's so many books and advice out. You can go find out how to do it. It's not that hard. The hardest part is getting to the point where you really want to do it. I mean, if you can get to that point, I say the rest of it's a lot pretty easy. But last year at General Assembly, one of the best organizations, denominations at evangelism are the Mormons. And even if you may not agree with some of the theology, they have doubled in size every 5 years or something like that, every 7 years since World War II. And they're just right on this target to keep doubling in size. And
I'm about some babies.
Well, some of it's from that. Also, when we taught our class, I was surprised to find out, I didn't know this until we did some research, that a lot of their growth comes from minorities and people of color, which you think of more
internationally.
Internationally, they're just booming. And so I kind of hung out so much at Temple Square during General Assembly, a couple of people came up, "Are we losing you, Don?" They were afraid I was going to go over the other side. But basically, the three keys to evangelism, I call them the three C's: commitment, community, and celebration. If you want to become an evangelistic congregation, those are the three keys. First is commitment. Do you really believe it? I mean, even if you might say, boy, they're brainwashed or whatever, some of the missionaries, they're committed to what they believe. I mean, they're committed to their good news. I preached an evangelism sermon a couple last month at my church where I'm interning, and I'm not stupid. I waited 4 or 5 months till I got to talk about evangelism. You know, I didn't go right off the bat. But somebody came up to me after I preached a sermon, who'd been at UU for 15 years, and he says, "You know what, Don?" Because in my new sermon, I talk about what my good news is. He says, "You really struck me. For 15 years, I've talked a lot about what Unitarian Universalism isn't. I've never really claimed what it is for me." And he signed up for Building Your Own Theology. And it's pretty exciting because that's what so often we do. So you have to have the commitment to really believe in what you're saying. If you don't have that, don't waste your money or your time going to the gross stuff, because it's just going to be frustrating. Second piece is community. When people say, what are they looking for in a church? They say warmth, welcome, and a caring community. I mean, the question is your community like that? And it's hard. My congregation's asked me to do a workshop on becoming more hospitable and welcoming. I'm a little nervous about that. You walk up to somebody and say, "No, you're not very hospitable or welcoming." I don't think you usually get a good response to that. So sometimes you have to have outsiders. I know some places they bring in outsiders and actually say, "Give us a report on how we're doing. And the infrastructure, are we supporting after somebody shows? Are they really feeling welcome and cared for?" The other side of community isn't not only inside, but it's outside. A lot of the books said, like somebody mentioned, a lot of the theories say 80% of people come because a friend invited them. And we started believing that, and it's what the books say in the research. But that research is about 10 or 15 years ago, most of it. The newest research, a great book we used for our class called Shopping for Faith, is that most people, and Peter's actually in the trenches doing the work, he's finding this is true, and it sounds like it's true for a lot of places, people are shopping for faith. And so it's not just the friends, but it's the website, it's the sign that you have out front, it is the advertising. Those are probably the next surveys, I think, will see some shifts because people are looking for something. And the last piece is celebration. You know, when you look at growing congregations or denominations, first thing is commitment. They ask the most of their members. And that's not what we usually do. I mean, commitment is really big. The second thing is that you go to these experiences and it's celebratory. I mean, I went to the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, man, I was having a blast. I mean, that was a good feeling. You know, and so you have to say, are you celebrating? The word evangelism means good news. Now, if you don't have a celebratory nature about your place, your people, is that good news? I have a great message for you. It's really wonderful. People have to feel that, and it's the energy they get when they walk into a congregation. So those are some quick keys to good evangelism. Sir?
So now you're trained. You understand that evangelism is not about changing what somebody believes, but about making your community available to them because they have a fundamental need for it. And we've talked about Don's three C's. What we want you to do now is self-direct. Gather into groups of, in groups of four. Actually, the hotel did it for us. And huddle. You can move the chairs around. And share very quickly and briefly the obstacles and challenges that you put. And pick one of them, because we don't have time to do them all. And then I want you to act as a group of consultants, evangelistic consultants, to talk about the one situation, the congregation that you pick. How would you attack it? What would you suggest some practical steps to move forward, given this framework, to do some things in evangelism. And we will do this for about 15 minutes. Ready? Go.
It's the hard part.
Hush up now.
No.
It doesn't work. It never works in my church either. If I could gently bring you back to the main group. Okay, we have just enough time for each group to spend about a minute on the problem and a minute to 2 minutes.
Minute and a half.
We'll take volunteers, and I'll try to summarize. Yes, and please come up here. This is actually being recorded and will be on the website, I'm told. So, and the UUA website. So, all right. Perhaps I shouldn't have said that.
Full disclosure.
Our wonderful group chose as our collective problem, our reluctance that reaching out evangelism is not in our nature as a church community. So we identified three things.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
No, the mic
isn't.
It doesn't amplify. It's only recording.
Did you hear reluctance and that reaching out is not in our nature is our collective problem? And our three ways to correct that or to work toward correcting that. We decided that some kind of community event that our church would sponsor or hold or make annual or biannual at our church to make a presence in our community to kind of let everyone know what we're about in an indirect way. As we were saying, that felt more comfortable than the door-to-door evangelism that some other faiths do, to be a presence in our community on an annual basis. The second thing is for ourselves to define our vocation, our message more clearly, so that when we are asked in the supermarket or at the bus stop line what we believe in, it comes to us immediately. It's a collective, unified, positive message. And the third thing, we wanted to incorporate the minister and charge the minister with portraying our passion. I think we all agreed yesterday that the Reverend King's message did touch us on a very passionate basis. You could feel her passion for what she was speaking about. And we would like to see that in our Sunday morning worship service.
Thank you very much. A quick aside about the door-to-door evangelism. It doesn't work. It never has. Mm-hmm. It door-to-door evangelism is for the evangelists. It solidifies them. The hit rate is way under 1% for those who do it. It's very low. It's very low.
It's very high.
Yesterday, someone mentioned the three-legged stool, faith, reason, and
tolerance.
Thank you. I knew there was a third in there. So we have a three-legged stool here approach to solving the problem. And we started with the problem of radical individualism and how can we be a community of people that respect that individual nature and sense and still be a community. And Bob will show just how we're going to do that.
When we're in normal relations,
new members, when people walk into our church, they will be greeted and welcomed, and then there will be a pool of folks next to them, and we're borrowing this idea from Ken, who then they'll say, "Welcome, Nadine, we're glad you're here," and then let me introduce you to this couple who will invite you to sit with them for the service, who will then invite you to coffee hour with them, who will call you the next week and invite you to lunch. So we'll find ways to create smaller networks. Now, our tripartite is hit the heart, make those individual connections while maintaining our individuality, hit the head, which is for us good old intellectuals, and I found that using facts and figures is a way to kind of waken people up. Some of the facts and figures are things like There are more Methodists in the Indiana Conference than there are UUs in the whole country. Ah. There are more people that have had their stomach stapled to lose weight in the United States than there are UUs in the continent. So we have this really good news, and we have this message, and we want our silly resolutions at GA to make a difference, but we don't have the critical mass to do that. And for us to really make a difference, we need more people to share our good news. And then, do you have another one? But we need to physically be willing to touch people and to shake hands and to be welcoming and accepting and understanding that some folks have a limitation or concern about touch. Millie, right? Lily shared with us that she began having her congregation hold hands to do the closing hymn or the closing song. We need to touch each other, which is part of leading church. Where's that?
For instance, I have to follow up. At the end of World War II, almost half of American households were multi-generational. A quarter of American households now are single-person households. People are more isolated than they've ever been in history, and they touch each other less than they ever have at any other time.
Well, I'm going to follow that because our group talked about creating a welcoming culture, and we came up with some very specific things. The first thing we talked about was naming our vocation to be open, and that is everybody's job. And we talked about sermons on that, articles in the newsletter, discussion at board and committee meetings, that it's everybody's job. Specifically, we were going to ask the membership committee to train greeters, to recruit and train them, so that they're on duty Sunday mornings, and that we can also hand those people off to committee chairs, board members, other people, so that they feel welcome. They're to touch base at coffee hour, and occasionally we're going to have visitor orientations after services. Maybe the minister can pop in for a few minutes because, as was mentioned, that's important to connect with the minister, but also people from the membership committee ask about the worship service, explain things that we do that they may not have seen other places, give them a tour of the building, and again try to connect with them. And then we will try to follow up with other visits and get a new member assimilation program going so that more than just being welcomed the first few visits, that we can assimilate them into the church.
Basically, we all agreed that one of the major obstacles we have is lack of clarity about our message. And here were some of the ideas that we came up with. Perhaps that we would start it ourselves by conversation and coffee hour and so forth among members of our church, saying, what's the quick answer you give people when they ask about Unitarian Universalism? And have you ever thought about how important that is? Secondly, we thought about doing workshops for the people in our congregation who might be interested in talking about that, keeping the a message that, in marketing, they used to talk about the elevator message, a message that you could convey in the time it takes an elevator to go from one floor to another. Now, we kind of don't want to do bumper sticker and soundbite mentality, but how do we keep it concise enough that people don't fall asleep while we're explaining, our whole memorandum of our beliefs?
The radical reformation.
And so part of that is just starting the culture by offering workshops, and if three people come, well, that's three people who didn't know before. And in conjunction with that, role-playing can be a fairly effective way of modeling that. And people usually, that works better than lecturing people anyway. Something that I found personally helpful, although I think we could probably improve on it, how many people in here have the UUA wallet cards that have the principles, the purposes, and the sources, or are half of our bylaws in your wallet? That can be real handy if you try to give the 30-second version and you hand it to somebody, especially if it's somebody you're not likely to run into again. Or you might even on the bottom of it write uua.org and you can find a church near you. And I was asked, this is probably a fourth item, but I was asked to give a pitch by Donald. If there's anyone in here who wants to have a website for their church, the UUA can provide website counseling. And what I have to say is, as the UU Church of Nashua, we think that at this point, what our membership coordinator says is about 50% of our new members are coming to us through our website site, UUNashua.org. And it is linked from the UUA website. We have our sermons on the website. We have our newsletter on the website. And although it's somewhat controversial, and there's a whole other conversation about this, we have the 100 Questions book, which originated in our congregation. So you at least get a fairly good flavor of what our church is about and not just where it is. So that's it for us.
Thank you. Our email address on it, because we forgot to put it on the handout.
Our topic was the tools that we can use to evangelize our message. And our first was publicity for our marketing and advertising guy right there. A ways to get yourself in the newspaper, not by advertising, which is paid, but instead by having a reporter come out to your church because you have something unique to offer the community. Things like labyrinth walk, adult education programs on aging, end-of-life issues, things that everyone's going to be concerned with that aren't necessarily involved, you know, just about Unitarians, but that everyone can relate to. And then once you get them in your building, how do you get them to come to Sunday services was our next question. So it's documentation. What's on your documentation rack? What's hanging on your walls? What's going to be immediately visible to those people who come in looking for solace at your church? And then training the laity who then give these programs, give them words to use, as the previous lady said. You know, how do you tell them about Unitarianism? Also, respect other people's beliefs and don't argue with them. I'll tell you this funny story. My husband and I were on vacation, and I sat down with these people, and they said, I mentioned my Unitarian thing, and they said, oh, no, I mentioned I was involved in my church. And they said, oh, then you believe in Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior. And I said, well, no, I don't. And they started to argue with me, and I said, well, I respect your choice, and I respect that you have chosen something that you can follow that hails your heart. And they said, and they basically got up sort of and were sort of confused, but walked away. But it was they said, you won't argue with me. And I said, no, but that's my message to them. And maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but maybe 10 years from now when they're maybe somewhere else, they can remember that a Unitarian Universalist respected them. And maybe they'll be in a place that they can then join, you know, make that decision. We chose to focus on fear of growth, and this fear usually comes from old-time members, people who have been there for a long time and have a clear sense of, or they think they have a clear sense of who they are, and they don't want that challenged. So we also thought that it was important that we honor these fears and honor the old-time members, the people who have brought us to where we are now, because they do have a good news, and we join them. And I joined the Unitarian Universalism 10 years ago. So we thought that a way to address this would be through a process similar to the one we've been going through here, giving people opportunities to talk about who they are, and maybe have some of us newer folks talk about the good message that these Unitarian Universalists had, that we wanted, and that how we had to go and seek it out, and how hard that was for us. Share our stories as newcomers. So have a real dialogue between the older crowd and the newer crowd. And then once we decide that we do want to be more open and we do want to grow, find a way to keep the long-term members. I come from a church where Conrad Wright is a member. And Conrad Wright is a great treasure for us. He has a particular viewpoint on what Unitarian Universalism is and should be. Maybe it's not one shared by everyone, but he's a treasure and he needs to be honored. And people like him need to be honored in our church. And ways to do this is perhaps having courses in the history of the church and having these old-time members
lift it up so that the younger folks can know where they came from, because our roots are important, and honor our traditions. And number three, find out who our community is and present the needs of our community to our congregation so that our congregation can find ways to reach out to the community. And how can we help? How can our church community be of service? So finding out who we are and what the needs of our community are. So those are our practical.
I just wanted to go next because we chose the same topic, dealing with fear, because that seems to be the underlying cause for any resistance to growth, fear of change, fear of the unknown. We like it the way it is. So the three things that we would suggest is educating the community about what's possible when it grows. There really is going to be a whole realm of possibility open up, many more groups financially, and many more opportunities to raise your profile and really make a difference, kind of be a force in the community. The second thing is to reassure them of their fears that they will lose intimacy, and you can do that by reminding them of the cell system. You don't need to lose intimacy, you create smaller groups. And the third thing is related to reassurance is communication. Look at your communication systems. You have to have a lot of ways to communicate with people. And remember that not everybody reads the newsletter. And you don't want to weigh your service down with 15 minutes of announcements. Mm-hmm. So look at how you can communicate them and know that people hear things differently, too, sometimes visually, sometimes orally. One way that we use in our church is a big easel that people see when they come in and when they leave. What's going on in the church today, so they're reminded when they leave every day, oh, at 12:30, there's a great thing for this group.
We started talking about the fear, and we thought we'd turn that fear around, and instead of fear of evangelizing, fear of talking to people, is the fear of what if we don't tell people? I was 33 before I found out about Unitarian Universalism, and I wasted all those years, you know, not knowing about it. So turn the fear around. What happens to the people if we don't feed their theological needs or their spiritual needs or their need for a community that's welcoming and empowering? Then we switched over to tools, and one of the really easy ways to do something like this would be to pass out index cards during a worship service and have people do the same thing that you had us doing about what their good news is. And then, if possible, have them share it with one other person really quickly within either the worship service or a coffee hour, and then encourage them to do it that week with somebody, neighbor, friend, or whatever. And then to use those cards, those quotes, on our websites, in a brochure or a card that we put in what we have a kiosk in our church, but people have bulletin boards and other things. And so to use those cards, or use them even quotes occasionally in the newsletter or in the order of service. Another thing is to go to street fairs. You know, if your community has a street fair, have a booth right next to the religious right booth and pass out UU propaganda. But to make it a class act. Don't just have handwritten posters up there. Do something nice so it really looks good.
I think they've earned doctorates.
You've done very good work, and we do have the authority to give you doctorates. And you will get that in a moment, but first... But first...
Credentials, the doctorates were really big in my church. So
good.
To take that.
Well, you're
going to
get a doctorate. It's a diploma. I have people who come up to me and say, you did that workshop, right? I said, yeah. And he said, you know, I still have my diploma on the wall. So this gives you a chance to walk your talk. You put it right...
Excuse me, but that's part of that class thing. Yeah. Everybody in who is a UU is well-educated, et cetera. And
right.
That's bullshit.
And I'll speak as somebody who came into... I found Unitarian Universalism when I was 36, and at that time had no degrees at all. And I still stuck around, but I sure felt kind of stupid for a while. Sometimes still do, even though I have a degree now. I want to give you one thing I always like to tell people about history is that if it wasn't for evangelism, there would be no Unitarian Universalism. I mean, we were sprung out of a kind of a reaction to the evangelism of the Great Awakening. And so if nobody evangelized it, we wouldn't be sitting around here in these workshops or conferences. So I always like to remind people it is part of our heritage. It's like it's not against our heritage. And one of our first evangelists was John Murray. And John Murray said, these are kind of words to go out and go and do your work. He said, go into the highways and the byways. Give the people something of your new vision. You may possess a small light, but uncover it. Let it shine. Use it in order to bring more light and understanding to the hearts and minds of men and women. Give them not hell, but hope and courage. Preach the kindness and everlasting love of God. Your diploma will say, and by the way, we got some people who won't get diplomas because we oversold it. We tried to make as many as we anticipated, but didn't anticipate enough. You will part of be able to walk your talk about following up is you will get something in the mail this week. It'll look exactly like this. So here's what your diploma will say. The Good News University of Unitarian Universalists hereby bestows the title of Doctor of Evangelism upon and gives commission to speak the good news, to share it with all who may be curious, and to shine the light of this faith out from under the bushel basket. And we've got our little flaming chalice there and our signatures, so it's authenticated. So,
mention that we've got
the... Oh, there's a handout that we put in chairs. It's just a brief kind of summary of evangelism. On the back, our working bibliography of different resources.
Back chair on the way out.
Back chair on the way out. I was thinking of that as we were doing it. If you would like that, we would be happy to. I don't want to... Is that... Okay, we'll do that. Okay, so as I just call up your name and you can come up and get your diploma and we can get a rousing applause there.